Okay, so welcome to our panel this afternoon, Dance Dance Revolution, and thank you all for coming. I'm Victoria Tillotson. I'm a creative producer at Watershed, which opened in 1982 as Britain's first arts and media centre. And Watershed is located in Bristol, which is a fantastic city in the southwest of England. So if any of you are ever there, you should definitely come. At Watershed, we create digital, physical, and conceptual spaces in which people from diverse disciplines can step to share ideas, experience new perspectives, and research and develop both projects and practice. One such space is Pervasive Media Studio. This is a collaboration between originally Hewlett-Packard, Watershed, and now the University of Bristol and the University of the West of England. Pervasive Media Studio is a physical space within the Watershed building that brings together artists, designers, academics, technologists, and the public to create and develop projects that explore the future of mobile, wireless, and sensory media. Some projects are commercial, some are cultural, and some are both. And it's a really fun, inspiring, and hugely productive space. It's no accident that Watershed and the studio and projects like the ones that you'll hear about this afternoon are coming out of Bristol. Bristol is a unique and vibrant city. It has the largest concentration of silicon chip companies outside of Silicon Valley. Companies such as Toshiba, Hewlett-Packard have large and engaged campuses there. Broadcasting is a hugely strong industry. For example, the BBC's Digital Village, an award-winning natural history unit, is based there, as well as an array of smaller independent companies. Bristol also has one of the largest contemporary art scenes in the UK outside of London and is internationally renowned for its music production. Its creative industries are amazing. For example, companies like IMDb were founded there and still keep an active base in the city. I could go on because there's loads more things. But what's most brilliant about Bristol is that all of these people talk to each other and collectively make things happen. So this afternoon, we've got a really exciting hour ahead of us. We're going to hear from a scientist, a choreographer, a musician, and a technologist. And there are three things that have contributed to bringing this multidisciplinary group together. Engagement with Bristol and the Pervasive Media Studio, which enabled connections between people and the space to play and take risks on ideas. Dance and interaction, or maybe time, space, and energy. The common threads that excites every one of this group and inspires their process. And openness, enthusiasm, and the willingness to share, listen, and debate ideas, which allows both understanding, exchange, and emergent practice to flourish. So this afternoon, we'll introduce the three practitioners and the three projects they have collectively produced, which are Rolling Stones, which you can see on the table here, led by Guerrilla Dance Project and Laura, which has been commissioned to premiere at the International Dance Week Festival in Croatia as a headline piece. Dance Room Spectroscopy, led by David Glowacki, a project which has received $60,000 in funding from the UK National Science Foundation, the EPSRC, coverage in Physics World and Chemistry World publications, exhibited at Bristol's Arnold Fini, the UK's biggest contemporary art gallery outside of London, showcased at Sonar Festival in Barcelona, and has also been funded as part of the UK 2012 Cultural Olympiad. And the third project is Me and My Shadow, led by Joe Hyde, and is a European-wide project commissioned by four organisations in London, Paris, Brussels, and Istanbul, and will soon run in places such as the National Theatre in London. This project is also part of the London 2012 Cultural Olympiad. So these three projects bring together gaming, dance, and technology, but through convergence of ideas and practice, break out of these areas to create experiences that are unique, emergent, engaging, and exciting. And these guys are amazing. They have an amazing chemistry. But this afternoon, they are planning to be purposefully provocative, so please don't be misled. As you probably guessed, I'll be your chair this afternoon, and we'll begin the session with four short provocations, one from each panelist who will introduce themselves, and then we'll continue discussion and happily take questions from the floor. So I'll hand over to Laura Kreifman, Guerrilla Dance Project, first.
Hi, my name's Laura Kreifman. I'm a choreographer based in the UK, and I'm a current fellow with the CLAW Cultural Leadership Programme. My passion is finding the dancers in everyday life. I am driven and love the manner in which we move organically, the way we move when we're talking to friends, the way that we interact with people. I forgot to say, you can start the video. Thank you. And my dance company, the Guerrilla Dance Project, is about liberating dance from formal environments. Sorry, forgot to check the level on that. Over the past 2 years, this video starts off with just some clips of our previous work and moves into our current project, which we're premiering in May. Over the last 2 years, we've been trying to understand why we want to liberate dance from formal environments. And we've done that through pervasive dance games, which have taken place at venues all over the UK, with formal performances reflecting that vocabulary back, with interactive pieces, with pop-up performances, all kinds of things. But we were really frustrated because we were never able to liberate our use of composition to the same extent as we could liberate the dance. So my provocation for today goes like this. Will you dance with me? This question should be the simplest thing to utter, yet we've created more and more labour-saving devices that isolate us from our bodies, and our culture has become so individualised that we feel increasingly less able to make contact with people, interact with them, let alone sometimes even look them in the eye. I feel like we're dancing through life in every conversation, and that movement is, and all our interactions are dance. And if we could see ourselves and take a moment to kind of reflect and have joy and laugh at how we work, we might have the confidence to ask somebody else to dance. And don't ask them to die, that would be awful. Yeah. I believe that gaming technology and gaming concepts can be subverted to create truly satisfying public dance experiences. I know this. We have three projects here today that have proved this is possible. And that the shift in creative process can be collaborative and ultimately satisfying for all art forms. And as was shown in the film Trash Dance, which is on here as part of South by Southwest, everything that we're doing in life in its own right is its own high art, and that we shouldn't feel isolated from art anymore. So I feel like we should be able to liberate dance from all formal environments and put dance back out into the public arena in the manner which we engage with it normally. The footage you're seeing right now is of very early rehearsals with our new prototypes, which are the Rolling Stones. This was our attempt to... this is the first public engagement version of how our company is developed. We've created these Rolling Stones, which are these large fiberglass balls, these are the two, the smallest, and they get big enough so that you can sit on them. They gather together like a Henry Moore sculpture or a piece of urban street furniture. And they can be left as an installation for people to encounter throughout a whole day. They're robust, they're durable, they power themselves. But they also, we have created a full choreographed show which happens with them, which is integral to the balls, uses the same music which the public have been using and playing around with all day, happens in exactly the same environment, and nothing has changed. So at no point do we actually, after the balls are in place as an installation, isolate or change the environment that people have been expecting. And I feel like this is really important because it's about actually shifting engagement. Half the time when you see dance in public environments, there's speakers, there are lights. It's not actually integral to the place it's being put. The units we've got inside these are small enough to go inside beer bottles, pint glasses, into books, into your shoes, into your suit jacket, so that we can make anything that you interact with now the instigator and the activator of the sound, and also, therefore, the instigator and activator of the dance, and allow you to see that the manner in which you move has its own integral beauty and magic to it. Thank you.
Great, thanks, Laura. So feel free to clap.
Yeah.
Thank you very much. Yeah. That would be good. Okay, so we'll hand over to Matt next.
Hi, everybody. I just thought I'd introduce myself with a slide from sunny London. Took this a couple of days ago, so you're not missing anything, but do come and see us sometime soon. I just wanted to provoke a little. My background is really as a technologist, and it's been an absolutely fascinating process of working with these people to try and fit the technology into something that produces an interesting experience. And I've got some provocations for you here. So technology has this ability to transform good dancers, great composers, very helpful technologists in an audience into very untrained musicians, extremely unwilling programmers. I've seen some very torturous things being done with Max MSP and a perfectly good composer, which is painful to watch. And rather heartfelt, it turns technologists into the people on all projects who seem to be ones who've got all the problems and everyone's hanging around waiting for them to fix them. And an audience that's just really been presented with a rather unimpressive video game. And this is something that I feel that the technologists within these type of projects needs to start dealing with these issues very directly. And that's one of the things that I've enjoyed about this working with this group. Because I believe the technology can actually be a great catalyst for working across traditional boundaries. It's a really great way of mediating between the traditional skills and roles. And if it can do that in amazing new ways, I think that the technology-inspired projects will become something that we'll consider to be worth doing. I think the first thing that the first approach I had to this was to say, look, there's something wrong with the technology because it's obviously not good enough. We need very, very good technology, and then it'll suddenly become very creative. And we are getting to a point now where very good technology is very affordable. I mean, what you can get in an iPhone is a staggering amount of graphics processing power these days. The sort of technology in these devices here that we can have a range of 3 kilometres on a ball like this for $100. You know, the technology is getting very good. There's one unfortunate problem when it comes to the creative aspects. If you add the best technology to the best music, to the best dance group, you get a very good result, but it's based on very ordinary perspectives of the world. And this is something that I think is possibly the first mistake I made when collaborating, was to try and find the best technology for them. Very soon after realizing that that wasn't going to work, I felt that it was more interesting to start looking at how the people that were around me, who were doing choreography and creating music and so on, how they were actually using the technology I was producing. And a very careful mutual observation, particularly by videoing what was going on, and then just sitting down carefully afterwards and seeing how people were using the technology, and really trying to understand the otherness of the people that you're collaborating with. So Laura and I, for example, have some absolutely fascinating conversations about choreography. I've never had a discussion with anyone about choreography before, and just listening to the way she talks about movement and so on, and if you do it in a very sensitive and light touch way and see how that's being impacted by your technology, you actually start to see how it's changing the way she's working, and this is where the creative aspects of the project really start to come to the fore. One thing that I really did notice was that, to start with, we were struggling trying to find common language. And I think there's been quite a lot of people who've thought that the problem with the technology is that they just don't understand the words I'm using. And that is true, but the problem with just seeing this as a task of translation, you're not actually seeing what it is within those words, what it is that they could actually mean in a new context. And so that is a process that needs to be dealt with very carefully. And so it's really important to make balance the technology issues with all the other aspects of the project and try and get them to find a balance. For Laura and I, we've developed some common reference, and I just put a couple down here. I just went through my notes, and there's a page from my notebook up there. We were just trying to work out how we would do any sort of notation, how we would describe how this, you know, I was saying, Laura, just tell me what you want the technology to do, I'm sure I can make it do it. And Laura's going, no, you just tell me what the technology could do and I'll work out how to dance with it. And it doesn't matter how many words we had for that, we had a fundamental problem. We had really no way of experimenting and playing with each other's world. So this slide on the left-hand side, this page on the left-hand side, very simply, we discovered that we needed to have deterministic events and semi-deterministic events in the way we were doing the dance. And the minute we made that discovery on a very sunny day in the park over some sandwiches, we suddenly had a way of talking about this, and it was very helpful. Another one is on the right-hand side. Some of the terminology we use is a bit odd as well, but it makes a lot of sense to us, and we're continuously re-evaluating whether the translation works. So, for example, the pitch of one of these balls. Law refers to it as bow to the king, because if you're a dancer, if you hold a ball and you want to adjust the pitch, you feel like you are bowing when you bow to a king. And so for her, that is how pitch means. But then that also brings into it connotations of what the dancer is actually doing to rotate the ball. They actually move their whole body down and up to do it. And so it's a lot more complicated than just saying pitch is bow to the king. Because by thinking of pitch like that, it's controlling very much how the dancer works over the whole action of changing the pitch. And acceleration is the same as attack. We're still having debates about that even to this day. One of the other things that has become completely apparent is that we need to create technological tools that everyone in the group can equally use. So musicians need musical instruments. Dancers need the ability to move without always making a noise. One of the first versions of the ball, every move you made on the ball changed the pitch of the notes being produced. And it basically means you immediately turned a dancer into a musician. Every time the dancer moved, the noise changed. And although they're great dancers, they're not really great musicians. So what we did is we actually threw half the sensors out of the ball, and that allowed the dancers to move without changing the music. And suddenly they could dance, and when necessary, modify and change the music. And that was a very great insight into this process. And we only discovered it because one day I presented them with a ball that had some broken software in it, and I noticed they were much more free with their movement. So we made that discovery that way. So yes, so this was how I was sort of presented with how the music and instrument was going to be created to start with using Max MSP. Well, obviously, Ableton Live is a much better tool for a musician. So the first task to do was to switch us over so that the composition of music could take place in familiar tools. And that's an example that we used all the way throughout the project. I think just one of the things that's become most important is that we should assume there's a great symmetry between all the different forces acting on the project. And an example of that, I mean, is that if we presented a piece of technology that works to the dancers, they seem to play with it for a little time and go, yeah, that does what you said, Matthew. Congratulations, that's a very nice program. If they discover something wrong with it, a feature or a flaw, it depends how you want to see it, that seemed to be the great stimulus for their creativity. And I'd say things like, oh, don't move the ball any further than that because it flips over to the other side and it makes a terrible noise. And they suddenly go, that's great, we can really work with that noise. So that's where the creativity comes from those bugs and those flaws in the software. And that seemed to be a very important aspect. And of course, when you start to move away from a perfect or technical solution, it allows you to create much more quickly. And I think the final point really is to say that within the technology, you have to leave space and allow everyone else in the project to fill that space in. So pleasingly, my job is over for this provocation. And at the end of these presentations, I hope you'll be able to help me add to that list of things.
Thank you. So we'll hand over to Joe next.
Yeah, my name's Joe Hyde. I think it says, Joseph Hyde.
It just says Hyde.
It says Joseph Hyde. I'm going to base my provocation on my latest project and some really genuine questions that have come up through this project that I don't know the answers to. I'm going to ask some questions, and if any of you have answers, that would be great. My project's called Me and My Shadow. That's my website there. Could I go on to the next slide, please?
Yep.
And this is a project based on some words that you can't read.
Joe, can you make sure you speak into the mic?
Yeah, this is based on some various combinations. You can't read the words on my slide, so you'll have to listen to me instead. It combines motion capture, with telepresence. Those are the two key technologies. And it combines gaming technology with dance, which I guess all the projects that we're talking about do today. Now, I call this my project, but I actually that's something I'm going to come back to at the end. I don't know if it really is my project. One thing we haven't really said yet is that all of us are kind of involved with all of these projects in one way, shape or form. We have this kind of incestuous arrangement. Another thing is there's some shared code between some of the projects. And I think I should be the person to introduce the kind of sixth member of our team here. Phil Chu there is the programmer involved in at least two of these projects. I'm not sure if he's involved in the Rolling Stones yet. So, next slide, even though it's not legible. God, that really isn't legible. Sorry about that. This project takes place in four different countries in Europe, as already mentioned. It's going to happen in London, in Paris, in Brussels, and in Istanbul. Can we have the next slide? Yeah, there you go, you can see it. Well, actually, let's go back to the previous slide so we can see that. So, to save me having to read out some difficult languages, certainly the third one, those are the three places where it's happening. So it's the National Theatre in London and various other centres in the other countries across Europe. And it's also happening in cyberspace as well, if that's not a ludicrously old-school term to use these days. There's a virtual space as well that these feed into. Okay, next slide. It consists of four installations like this. They're very simple, just a little kind of single user booth. And this basically comprises a motion capture unit. It's based on very simple gaming technology because the whole point of it is it should be repeatable. So there's going to be four of these to start with. There could conceivably be 16 of them or 100 of them. There's going to be, at the end of the project, a recipe on the internet that you can download with all the code to build one of these things. But it's basically a motion capture based on three Kinects inside the box, two in the front corners and one on the back, which can form a complete 3D mesh of a person into the space. Next slide, please. So there's actually going to be four of these, like so, and each of these captured geometries and movements of the users of the space are going to be projected into a single collaborative space, a single virtual space. Next slide, please. And these are going to be in the four different countries. So one's going to be in London, one's going to be in Paris. Enghien-les-Bains is actually the area of Paris. One's going to be in Istanbul, and one's going to be in Mons in Brussels. So that's the telepresence part of it. So what I'm going to do now is just show you a little video of this in action. Now, this is the latest. Don't play it for a second. This is the latest stage of the project. We're only halfway through this process. And this is a workshop that took place in January at the National Theatre in London, which is where the final showing is going to be. And this is the four installations in prototype form next to each other. And they're kind of colour-coded. It may not be clear on this, but the far left is London, who's kind of orange. Next one along is Brussels, who's kind of green. Then we've got Istanbul, who's kind of green. No, that's not Istanbul, that's London.
That's London,
yeah. And he's purple. And then Istanbul, who's this kind of, I don't even know what colour that is, turquoise, I think.
Louis.
And you should be able to see people feeding through into each other's spaces. So basically your virtual representation feeds into the other spaces. And you should also be able to see that you can leave what I'm calling shadows, hence the name of the project, leave kind of traces of yourself through the space. Okay, if you could play a bit of that. So these four are actually you can stop it there. I only want to show a tiny snippet. These four are actually next to each other. I've kind of stitched them together in Final Cut Pro, but they're next to each other physically in the space, which is a good way to test them out. The next stage is to roll them out into the four different countries. But in this case, they were still streaming through the internet, so we know that that works. So that slightly long-winded preamble is really just a way to enable me to ask some questions, which, as I say, are genuine questions. I actually would, if any of you have answers, I'd like to hear them. My questions are not really technological. They're not really about the technology that I use. I'm clear on that. They're not even really artistic ones. They're kind of social questions, I think, that these projects throw up. The first thing I find is that I don't know what this project is. It was my idea, but I don't know what it is. It's not really an art project, I don't think. You know, there isn't really... In fact, somebody asked me quite early on, where's the art? You know, I'm not kind of making anything. I'm just creating this blank slate that users can create within it. It's not really a game. If it's a game, it's probably not a very good game. There aren't very clear aims or objectives. It's not quite a social space. It's kind of a really strange hybrid between these things. So because I don't know the answer to that, I don't know what to call people. I don't know what to call these guys. Are they dancers? In the final version, they won't be. These are dancers, but the final version, there'll be anybody who wants to go in there. I want them to dance, but, you know, they're not dancers with a capital D. Are they users? Are they players? Are they an audience? I genuinely don't know what term to use. Secondly, I don't know what to call myself. I'm a musician, really, by the way. That's what I trained to do. But this is not a music project. It's not even really a sound project. It's this really interesting mixture of things. And finally, it's a very complex and, as I used the word incestuous at the beginning, I don't know if that's the right word, but it's a really convoluted kind of collaboration. And not only do I not really know what to call myself, but I don't know what to call anyone else who's involved. So I'm not the music guy for this project. I'm not the composer. I'm not the director, really. I'm just the sort of guy who made it happen. Phil over there is writing all the code, so he's really doing all the work. But he's not...
You know what to call him, don't you? It's Phil.
Phil, yeah, okay. Yeah. All right, we just use name. But yeah, I kind of... he's sort of ending up designing a lot of the project, really. You know, the code... I think with a lot of these projects, the code and the art are not separate. You know, more and more we do these things. You're not just a programmer, you know, you're a programmer, but half of the creation takes place within that. These dancers that you see on the screen there, they're kind of body experts, really. What we used them for was to work out how the navigation would work. And they're just people who, A, are really good at moving and really can, you know, this is really hard at this stage. It's not very clear from this, but to navigate around the space, you kind of do these kind of skiing kind of motions. They can do it. Most people can't. So we're learning how to refine it through them. There are also dancers. I don't know if you know this, but dancers, I don't know if you experience as well, dancers are really patient. They're people who seem to be able to kind of just be around for a long time and move around. If you did that with normal people, they'd go... No, I've had enough. Yeah, so that's my provocation. Basically, who are we involved in this project and why are we here? What is this? Thank you.
Thank you. Okay, so finally, David.
My name is Dave Glowacki. So I study theoretical nanophysics at the University of Bristol. I'm used to going to academic conferences, so I've enjoyed South by Southwest a little bit more than I normally enjoy a conference. So my colleagues think I'm actually at a real conference right now, so that I'll just let them carry on thinking that. So my slides are from a higher level, I guess, pretty abstract, but really interesting based on what we've just heard. I'm used to having a lot more time than the 5 minutes I have right now. So you're just going to have to take my word for some of the stuff I'm telling you. But there's a view in physics where you can actually boil down our entire experience of reality and everything that you experience in your experience of reality on the nano level is a result of what physicists call energy landscapes. So actual energy topologies that particles move around on. And all emergent phenomena come from the complex interactions on top of these landscapes. So I have two illustrations of two simple landscapes here. These are in some papers I've published that are in Nature. If anyone reads that journal, probably not. But anyway, so these are real energy topologies. So we go to the next. So the next slide. So yeah, the initial motivation for this project was basically talking to most of my friends, my mom, my girlfriend, and them never understanding what the hell I actually do for... I mean, moms never understand this, but in my case, it's particularly complicated. So I thought, okay, I'll make a immersive quantum experience and just tell my girlfriend, just go in there and play around and see if you figure anything out and you can help me out with it. So I gave it the most difficult name you could give an art project. I called it Dance Room Spectroscopy. It never occurred to me that, you know, other people might not be able to say spectroscopy. I just thought everyone knew how to say spectroscopy. Well, the developers on the project, about 3 months later after we've done it, can now finally pronounce spectroscopy consistently. Next. So how DS works, it's an immersive quantum experience, audio-visual quantum experience that works for arbitrarily large groups of people, where what we do when you step into our room, which is mapped with real-time 3D imaging cameras, we actually turn you into an energy field. I mean, you're all actually energy fields anyway. You're just really fancy energy fields. But there's a level on which you're just a big, complicated blob that's an energy field that's highly structured now, but as you age, you'll eventually dissipate and then go into equilibrium with the environment, okay? So we're actually just doing something that's totally physically reasonable and doing it this way. So we have a quantum dynamics simulation, and it's totally rigorous. The physics is rigorous. We actually solve something called the Schrodinger equation in real time. So it's not quite art, because it's real equations, okay? We map the space with 3D imaging, and we have a projector, and when you step into the projector, you're an energy perturbation in the quantum field, and all the particles immediately self-assemble around you, and you can manipulate them. And then we use a bunch of fancy math physics tricks to actually convert the chaos of the particle dynamics into soundscapes that everyone can hear. So arbitrarily large crowds, we can actually resolve the energy vibrations of those crowds and feed it back to them. Next. Okay, so here's a few pictures of what it looks like. So here you see, you know, typical video games have 1, 2, 3 users. You know, our stuff, you can cram 300 people into a room if you want. I mean, the only limitation is how big the room is, really. Next. Another view. Next. So you're seeing quantum liquids here, and you're seeing the people's energy fields. Next. Next. And then, could you just show the video? And I just want to show you a minute and a half video footage, and then we'll leave off here. So the video you're about to see kind of scales up from 2 users to 3 users, and then a big crowd of people. And in the second clip you're going to see, there's 4 clips here, you're going to see 2 dancers come together, manipulate the quantum particles. They stick their heads together, and you literally see the quantum particles transfer between their brains. All right?
Can we can we turn the lights off totally for this one? Could it be easier to see? Yes, please. Thank you.
Turn the lights on or off?
Off, please.
Yeah.
Thank you.
Okay, let it roll. There you go, stick your heads together. I'll turn the volume up a little bit more, Matt. If you watch carefully, you can actually observe quantum tunneling. If you're interested, come ask me and I'll explain to you where the tunneling happens in this, if anyone knows about quantum tunneling. There's the tunneling, all little particles flying out of the people. So I guess in concluding my bit here, I'm asking a very similar question to Joe. I don't actually know what this is. Every single time someone at South By has asked me about what I'm doing, I give them a different answer. I've written some of them down. I said it's an immersive audiovisual quantum experience. I said it's a musical instrument. I said it's a giant quantum theremin. I said it's a social experiment because you actually see people that don't know each other start to hold hands and do weird stuff, like be nice to each other in spaces. And it just kind of rises all of a sudden and it dissipates. I've said it's performance art, and then, you know, now I'm actually starting to wonder what I'm doing as a scientist. So, yeah. On that note, I guess we'll move on.
Thank you. very much. So we'll take some questions from the floor. But first of all, I wanted to ask you to just talk a little bit more about the collaborative and iterative process of developing these works. I think particularly in the case of the dance room spectroscopy.
So we had a really interesting chat earlier, which I said, if we could recreate for the audience the magic of the workshops that we had. When the first time I met Joe and Laura, and we all stepped in a room, a musician, a physicist, and a choreographer, and the discussions we had over 4 days where I explained physics to them, and and Laura said to me, well, dance is manipulating time, space, and energy. And it was like, oh, that's all of physics and science, actually. That's pretty nuts. So I guess it would be interesting to hear your interpretation of what you experienced during those times.
The learning process with all these projects has been really, really key. Actually, to develop a proper iterative collaborative and practice model is actually very tough because you have so many ideas and actually each of the skill sets comes from so many different directions. And actually I think the biggest lesson we've learned is actually taking the time to move together up the ladder collectively so that we actually allow everyone else to catch up with each other and move and understand where we're moving to. And as a result of that, we've had some incredible moments where we discovered things, where I figured out if you set the dancers moving at a certain rate, you can bounce certain particles out and you keep other particles in their bodies. When we did this, which is us me falling around with the dancers, Dave goes, whoa, what are you doing? What are you doing? That's impossible. And I was like, well, no, it's not, because we're just giving them enough energy to make those ones move, and they're bigger and they've got a heavier mass, so if we get those out, the other ones will stay. And he was like, but I can't teach that to my students at the university. But within the body and within the kind of visualization of it, it was a really easy thing. But that was a moment of me going, I wouldn't have thought that was a complex idea, because the world I was living in, it made sense. And so we kind of realized that that was in one of the first weekends, and we realized that was actually a really key thing, was actually to keep making sure we gave ourselves the time to move up through each level together like that. So we find out which things were complex and which ones are easy and where were you getting lost? Mm-hmm. And I've been working on the very first point where we started trying to explore how to liberate our use of music to make it as repetitious and playful and joyful as we were making the rest of the dance. We actually had a really tough time of it because I didn't have the right collaborators on board. And what I was dealing with was somebody who couldn't see. In my head, I could see the potential of dance in four dimensions. I knew that we could make dancers control and be precise and rigorous, but also where the freedom was and, you know, what you can get to do. And unfortunately, I was working with somebody who didn't see movement like that. So almost saw things in 2D, whilst we were trying to work in four dimensions. But also for myself, wasn't crediting that I wanted to learn about the technology. I wanted to be able to engage with it. We wanted to create together collaboratively, you know, all those kind of things. And it was completely by accident we discovered that this wasn't working, and it was fine. But actually finding that openness where everyone values each other's intelligence and values how you can actually bring all of those in together is really tough, because most of the time we're being taught that we are a specialist in one field and we have to railroad down that. On these projects, I've been jokingly saying over the last couple of months, I don't think I've done any choreography for a year. I have, actually, but not choreography that's actually appeared out in the public, or, you know, it's been workshopping, it's been improvisation, it's been rehearsal material. And that's really strange for me at the moment. But actually, during that year, I have felt more confidence in actually saying, I'm a choreographer and I'm working in these ways, which is a complete kind of flip side. And I think that...
Sort of taking on from that, when I got involved in this project, I realised that they actually wanted flawed technology. They didn't want perfect technology. I was talking to people on the internet saying, you know, have you got some of these IMUs? And they're saying, yeah, we've got ones, and they've got 50 hertz uprate speeds, and they're, oh, we can do all these amazing things, and they're incredibly accurate. And we discovered a very simple thing, that if you give a dancer an object and everything they do with it makes a change in the noise, they're pinned absolutely rigid to where they are. Because if they move at all, they make a noise. Yep. How can they dance? So what we did is we took away some of the sensors, and I could, for example, pass this object to Laura like this, and it wouldn't make a noise, or I could pass it to her like this, and it would make a noise. And now the dancer has got some ability to dance, I mean, and has a way of using the tool. So as a technologist, I mean, you know, people, I've got some lovely emails from you, oh, that's no, we don't want that, that technology is no good, ours is much better than your technology. And I'm going, yes, but it isn't what we want for our dance. And so in some way, like Laura hasn't done choreography for a year, I don't think I've produced really good technology for a year either. But between the two of us, we've had a marvellously creative time.
Yeah.
So you raised this in your point, Matt, when you said, I wrote it down, you said there's an interesting balance between determinism and semi-determinism.
Yeah,
and from a physicist's perspective, nature's not fully deterministic, and nature's not fully random. Yeah. Nature exists in this interesting realm, which is stochastic.
Yeah, and that's very interesting because we discovered.
And
that
let me explain what stochastic means real quick. Stochastic means any given instantiation of a physical system. I don't know what's going to happen. If you ask me, I can't tell you what's going to happen. But I can tell you, averaged over a million realizations of the system, what's going to happen.
Yeah.
So what it means is it's sort of a chaotic determinance. And that's, I hear, and that's how the quantum equations of motion work. Mm. I mean, it's really beauty that the kind of things we're talking about in a sort of collaborative process when you get these people together, actually there's equations for all this stuff. So it kind of is really beautiful because there's this top-level view, and then there's a sort of nuts and bolts, and they all fit together nicely.
And on that double edge, one of the things which I spend a lot of time doing, both in all the work I do, is actually paying attention to the audience. All of our work is designed for public engagement in public spaces, actually honouring people's own intelligence, the fact that people move, the way they work, you know, the fact that people figure these things out, the way we social dance, the way dance has been invented. All our high-end dance has started from initial social dances, things that people have invented themselves. And that's been a really interesting kind of thing of going, wait a minute, yeah, but they'll get that. And actually realising that things that have been a panic don't need to be panicked about, because people will figure that out themselves, that people will investigate things, that people make rules for themselves, that, you know, we create games. That's what we do as part of our imagination. And one of the reasons why we like the objects not making noise all the time is because we're playing with these very magical things where, wouldn't it be amazing if everyone on the train decides to rip up all their newspapers and turn them into sea anemones? Because isn't there a point where you've gone, I wish everyone who was reading their newspaper did something different?
But no, everyone's doing their iPhones on the train, so there's no chance of that happening.
Okay, we've got 20 minutes left, so right. I think we need to see if anybody's got any questions. We've got roving mics because they're podcasting, so if you can wait for the mic to get to you, that would be fab. Okay, so we do the lady first.
Thanks. So I've been to a lot of panels, and most of them have been kind of fluffy. And I got to say, this has definitely not been one of the fluffy panels. It's just been a real challenge intellectually, so thanks for that. I'm more of a business person, and my question is, you say it's going to be going out and people are going to be able to use it. Is this something that eventually maybe a club will buy this and they will have a club where people can come in and use this as kind of a, you know, hey, the new club down in, you know, Tokyo is going to be this. And everybody...
We were hoping you could tell us that.
That's how I envision it, but I don't want to be business-oriented if you want it more for art.
No, well, there's... for art things, this gets me onto the provocation I actually just realised I left off. If you know your market... If you know your audience, you also know your market, and you also know who wants to access that audience. And therefore, there is always a way in which to make that economically viable. And I dislike personally, greatly, the idea of art and the failing economy around that. I think that's absolute baloney. We have chosen with, I know both with David's project, Dancing Spectroscopy, and with us with the Rolling Stones, very specifically to keep them open source and open hardware. Because actually everything is hackable. That's the whole point. We're using, one of them uses a Kinect 360. The technology is not actually where we need the ownership. What we have is one of our major assets is kind of that knowledge asset, which is that we can make use of this and we can implement it and we can deliver and in ways which people otherwise might not want to, but they will do other things with it. And so we are hoping that we can commercialize on it in that way. But also we're trying to make things which are rigorous enough that these are designed to be able to put up as a 2-month installation places. As well as having shows, as workshops, and things like that, they could be left as a public installation. So that they do have the ability to be bought and handed over if that's what people want.
DS is at a point where I think it could easily be financially viable. Like, I've been approached by a number of people, actually, and I'm at a kind of juncture where I'm trying to decide if I want to be an academic or not. So I still kind of like academia.
My project
is also on an open source model, and I kind of feel it has to be, because you talked about hacking, and both mine and Dave's projects are based on the Kinect 360, which we mentioned, and they're based on hacked code, basically, on code that's already been made with that. And I think to kind of try and capitalize on that would probably be kind of wrong in some way. But also, I don't necessarily
agree with you. I'm the only American on this panel, I'm ultimately a capitalist at heart, you know.
But I kind of...
We haven't managed to reprogram your audience years he's been living in.
Okay, let Joe finish his point.
Yeah, I kind of feel that, you know, I said in my little provocation that we're going to put this out there as a kind of recipe or a blueprint that you could build your own. And that sounds like I'm being a kind of pie in the sky kind of arty type, and I am really, but I actually think you reach more people that way, that you're going to have much more kind of impact and therefore kind of exposure and build your career and other projects on that. And that's generally what I've found with my own work. It's better just to get your name out there and then let other commissions and other work come in than to try and kind of close it off and make money directly.
In talking to business people, I've struggled because this thing we have can be so many things that I can't define to them what my product is. Someone said to me, "That's your product?" And I was like, "Well, yeah, but I would never want to describe it that way."
I think this is one of the most exciting things about this collaboration, is that all these things are possible, but we're starting from a different place to normal projects. My background is very much commercial, and I'm being very uncommercial on this project, and I'm forcing myself not to see this as something we could commercialize. I'm seeing it as open source, open hardware, and I am not looking at creating products out of it, and that's quite a challenge for me. That's not my background.
Whereas I'm currently in the middle of a year of training and cultural leadership, which includes financial management, and governments, and fundraising.
The key thing is not to start with the commercial issues on this project in the same way that other projects are done. And that's also part of this thing of the way this collaboration could work. So you could probably start this whole thing again, take technology out and put commercial aspects in and start again. These are the sort of projects that will generate that revolutionary new experience for audience, game players, whoever, practice bodies or whatever they are. And so this kind of not for competition aspect, commercial aspect, is what we are reveling in, because it is generating commercial possibilities all the time.
Well, one thing I also think, when you say commercial, you almost, in my mind, you're sort of making it sound like one person will have it or one place will have it, but I mean, look at a bar.
Yeah.
The ability to walk into a bar and have a beer poured and handed to you is done tens of thousands of times every night, and yet some people pay for more for one and the other. So, I mean, it can be totally open to anybody, but still commercialized.
Sure. Exactly.
Okay, we'll move on to the gentleman in the middle.
Hi, guys. Hi. I think you're all really fascinating, and thanks for making the trip across the pond to talk to us.
Anytime.
It's been fun. When I got a spare 24 hours.
So I thought maybe I'd try to provide an answer to you guys for your questions. And the thing, as an observer, what I'm seeing is this dichotomy from the left side of the table to this right side of the table. And so I'm actually a software engineer myself, and I've been working with my brother to try to solve this problem of how to give people a synesthetic experience. And I think adding the group aspect to that, which is what you're doing with the networking the countries together and stuff like that, is really incredible. And I think what on the left side of the table here is doing is exploring the things that the very small things that people find enjoyment in like movement, and how you can translate that into the physical world. And then you guys are doing that visually and audibly too. So what I'd love to see is like something that that sort of combines both those aspects. One that one where it's like on the left side, because I think people are creative. People have that creative yearn at birth, and they people want to be creative, but they don't have the ability to compose because they have to practice with an instrument. But what you guys are doing is you're exploring composure through our physical movements that we do every day, which is something that we have a lot of practice with. And so if we have a lot of practice with that and we can translate that into something visual and audible, people have the ability to create some really meaningful art. And I think that would be really incredible. So I would just love to see this kind of gradient become.
I think that's a really nice answer. And actually, we were talking about it last night in a really literal sense, actually combining some of these ideas.
Where you actually control the parameters of the quantum simulation.
And something that I'm quite struck with, actually, to talk about Dave's project and Laura's project. Dave's project is quite big. I talk, like, physically, it's about people as kind of small entities within a big space and the relationships between those people. Whereas Laura's potentially is kind of this big. It's about a kind of much more intimate movement realm where it's, you know, the world is the size of your hands. It's kind of something you can hold rather than be within. So you're containing it rather than being contained. And I think bringing those two together could be really interesting, actually.
There's so many possibilities for combining in various different ways.
And we've purposely kind of, for us, with Matt and I, what we're doing with the units inside these, the IMUs, is we've created them with a lot of latent possibility. The Rolling Stones, these big urban sculptures, are the first public interaction with that. But actually, the whole point of the unit is that we know with the unit, we were discussing this the other night because we'd actually all been half thinking about it when you all finally actually said it.
So thanks for bringing it up.
We can use the data streams coming off the IMU. We can assign those to be visual. To have visual effects rather than have audible effects, if that makes sense, rather than music and things like that. We can make it so that you could put you could be arranging flowers in the vase, and actually each different flower you put in was actually making different music. So as you put flowers in a vase, you were composing your own symphony. You know, there's just loads of things that we are really just going, actually we can do that. And we've tried to make it so that we can keep developing past this project as well. So rather than, often you end up feeling like when you're creating stuff, you're creating something which actually is finite. Actually, it's just for that project. And actually, with all of these, we've realized, no, there's another iteration. There's another way of moving that forward. There's actually a spin-off of this here that actually, this is the thing that's actually exciting, not quite what we thought it was.
Yeah, it's like we've started with the collaboration.
Yeah.
That's the key, not started with this is the project and that's what the project's going to do.
Yeah.
And that seems to be what is the enabling thing for this creative
process. Actually, that's not quite true, because you were already working on your project and my project just kind of happened. So that what I see this table as being is just this fantastic coincidence. It was actually that workshop, just a single point, a single weekend actually, we all just happened to be in the same place at the same time. Yes. And since then, these things that were maybe separate have kind of collided, like some of Dave's particles, and changed each other. And each project has changed because of the way they fed off each other already.
It's also sort of surrounded by the pervasive media studio. But I've never been there. I've never actually been to the place. Everyone keeps saying, you must come down to Bristol and go to the place. But I still feel very much it's part of a project that was spawned in the framework there. So, you know, it is a very complicated experience, but incredibly exciting.
So we have 5 minutes left.
Yeah. Okay.
Hi guys, I can't believe it's taken me to come here to see you guys.
It works.
This
like
is
a lot,
quite
actually.
Simply the best thing that I've seen in the last 4 days. All right, the question is going to be, it seems like you're creating a commonality between time, space, and energy, if it's a space, if it's using dance. And what's really fascinating about that is because that's if you're creating that commonality, then however the audience play within that, they can define it themselves. And if you think metaphorically about this, it's actually not too different to designing a Twitter or a Pinterest, because what you're doing there is you're creating a commonality around share how you will share. But all you're doing is you're doing it within a next level time, space, energy space. But I love the fact that the audience can just do make their own meaning from it, and you're not defining the meaning of it. And that's beautiful. It's like amazing. Seriously, guys.
There is a one big difference between these all these projects, I think, and we might disagree on this, and Twitter or Pinterest, which is physicality. Yeah. You know, that's why we had this Beyond Dance Dance Revolution title, is that they all actually involve the body and physical movement. Yeah. You know, my project, you could say it's like Second Life, but it's not like Second Life because it's your actual body that goes in the space, not an avatar. And they all involve physical places, but the virtual and the...
And some sort of abstracted representation of a human. So most dance games, you're just a little person on a screen, and you're a normal person. Well, if you know, I think Matthew had a good way. He's like, that's just asymptotically approaching boring. Why not, you know? And that's when an older person looks at some kid playing a dance game, they say, well, why not just go dance with your friends? You know, but when you come and step into a quantum simulation, my grandparents don't say to me, David, why don't you just go outside and pretend to be a quantum field patient? You know,
I mean, when
it's a senseless, the question doesn't even make any sense because the technology is actually enabling the creative experience instead of being a lame representation of what's already in the world.
I remember the first day I brought one of these balls to Laura's, one of her rehearsals, and I rolled this white ball across the floor in conveniently a black dance room, and they kind of made some noises. And everyone said, "What do they do?" And I said, "Pick them up." And that moment when the dancers started to just discover, and they said, "Yeah, does it do anything else?" And I said, "I've made a change," and it was their exploration of it, which was the exciting bit, and that process of really collaborating in a way that's different. That's where this sort of hyper reality of computer games is asymptotically going towards boring, because it's the end. You're going to end up making it just like it really is now, which is like, why are we doing that? You know, let's go the other way. Let's make it. Very, very, very.
We've only got a few minutes left. Sorry, Laura. And I know we've got one final question that really wants to be asked. So
that's fine. Go to gentlemen.
Just hold that thought.
I'll
have a discussion afterwards.
Yeah, sorry. The gentleman. I feel like I could listen to you guys talk all day. It's really amazing. We can.
We can.
Yeah.
We have enough content for a 5-day conference.
I've been listening to them all week.
So, I'm just trying to understand. Context of how, like, I understand this workshop that you guys have, or the studio, whatever, that brings people together, but can you tell me more about the process and, like, what sparked this whole collaboration? How did you guys individually get involved?
So
someone select you, or like,
no, we've all actually started each of the projects independently. We all started with our own question or urge to do something. But it's what we then ended up finding is that through the fact that we all have a distant or a direct association with the piece of media studio, that the dots were able to be connected together. And
you each individually went to the studio.
No, when I wrote the proposal for the Dance Room Spectroscopy project, I went to them and said, "This is going to be awesome." And they said, "Great. Where's your portfolio?" I said, "I have none." Okay, and they said, "Okay, well, we won't let you use our art gallery unless you do workshops with established artists." So I had to do workshops as part of the dance room development process. And we spent 2 weekends, and that's where I met Joe. So Joe was the initial artist. And then I met Laura through the Pervasive Media Studio. Mm. And that was the kind of time where I say we liberate ourselves from our bodies for 2 weeks and stepped into the quantum world. And we just had our minds blown together. And then it kind of just spawned out of that and gone its different ways.
But there was... just one final thing that I'd like to say, which is that the thing that has really inspired me about all these projects, and I hope is the case, is that they all celebrate our own movement. It's however you want to move these balls. They're big enough for you to sit on them. A gran can sit on them, turn around to talk to her friend, and the ball will start singing at her. The smallest ones are small enough for small kids to pick up. That's half the fun. The fact that you walk into the space, and as soon as you're in your space, you create these beautiful visualizations. As soon as you're in the space, you can affect and talk to and move with somebody in Istanbul, in Mons, wherever. We so often don't get a chance to see and... reflect on the beauty and the joy that is actually part of us, a part of the way that this room is working, where people have sat, all our own natural dynamics. And it's, for me, one of the most mind-blowing things has been that actually having all of us come from different directions, that somehow seems to be a driving factor underneath all of them.
Yeah, hugely.
Mm. And it's, yeah.
Great. We're just out of time, I think. So thank you all so much for coming, and thank you all for speaking so well about your project. Do come and have a chat with us. Laura's got her Rolling Stones here, which are working. And we will be going for some drinks afterwards.
We've got some leaflets up here, if anyone...
Yeah, so if anybody wants to come and grab some of that stuff, please do. Thank you very much.